Point Breakaway is brought to you by GameTime, your new go-to app for the best deals on last-minute tickets. Ticket prices drop right before the game starts, and because GameTime tracks prices in real time from thousands of trusted sellers, they're able to show you the best last-minute deals with prices up to 60% off. For example, going to a Lakers or Clippers game is a hot ticket right now, but with GameTime, you can try to see the best deals and get a panoramic view of Staples Center. And then with the double tap way of checking out, you can just get right out, get your tickets, and you're good to go. So the Game Time app is simple, quick, and easy to navigate. Download the Game Time app in the Google Play or App Store and score last-minute deals on tickets up to 60% off. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Point Breakaway, the podcast about the Kings and Ducks and Southern California hockey and anything else that comes to mind. I am Josh Cooper, and I am joined by my co-host, the one and only Shane O'Brien. Shane, how are you doing? I assume your American Thanksgiving was quite fun. I mean, you get two Thanksgivings because you're Canadian living in the U.S., so congratulations on that front.
Thank you. Yeah, it's definitely one of the perks that comes with being a Canadian, living with your green card down here. We get to enjoy both Thanksgivings, but it was great, Coop. Like I told you before, the Wednesday night before Thanksgiving for a single guy is one of those nights you have marked on the calendar, and it did not disappoint. We went to a restaurant in Newport Beach. For anyone that hasn't been to Newport before, if you're looking for a great restaurant, a restaurant is the spot. My buddy Jordan owns it. It was a great scene in there, great music, a lot of people I knew, and it was just a good atmosphere. And I might have had a little bit too much fun because I slept in Thanksgiving morning a little bit longer than I wanted to, Coop. I missed the complete first football game, and I think I missed the first quarter of the second game too. So I slept in a bit, but my Thanksgiving was great. How was yours, buddy?
It was interesting because my kid started running a fever at around 11:30 a.m. So we were supposed to go down to visit my wife's family, who was all in town. Sadly, we were at home the entire time, watching videos of Thomas the Train, Daniel Tiger, Blippi, you name it. He was watching it. But I did run to the grocery store. They did have some turkey. We were able to MacGyver a Thanksgiving recipe, essentially. And overall, we were together. And that was the most important thing, was we were together as a family, and may have sucked not being with everyone else, but that was...
You salvaged.
You
salvaged the Thanksgiving.
I fucking salvaged that shit, man.
Attaboy. Never say die.
I fucking salvaged that Thanksgiving. But yeah, he was sick and he was crying a whole bunch. And it was funny, like the day after, I just basically was like, all right, Sarah, you're going to work right now to just get out of the house. And then when she got home, I'm like, I'm going to the Ducks game to watch them. So it was just sort of like we just had to get out of the house because it was also raining on Thanksgiving, which again goes to what the fuck is going on with our weather right now. It's cloudy today. Gloomy.
Yeah, I blame my sleeping in and almost missing Thanksgiving because of the rain. I woke up at one point and, you know, just like when it's raining out and you're just like, oh, that just sounds nice. And you're in bed and you're just like, don't even care what time it is or what day it is. Yeah, the rain has been—it's been weird. But when you're sleeping, and you're a little hungover. It's not bad, Coop.
I can only imagine that. I can't remember the last time I was hungover, just because I'm in bed at like 10 o'clock every night because I have the human alarm clock going off at 6, and it's always a wonderful feeling. So, but the whole thing is being with family, and right now I'm happy to be with my podcast family, which is you, Obi. So this is wonderful as always.
Let's do it, buddy.
Yeah, let's do it. Today's going to be a fun episode. We're going to have John Gibson, American legend, and goaltender of the Ducks. I wouldn't say, well, maybe you could say legend. I mean, he did win a World Junior Championship, which was awesome. And we're going to talk to him about a whole bunch of topics, probably some stuff about Pittsburgh. I know how much he loves talking about his hometown. But before we get to Gibby, which I know you Ducks fans are all excited about, I do want to talk about the Kings, who lost to the Ducks in the freeway faceoff last night. And Shane, we've talked about this several times, but I just have to bring it up again. We've had power rankings come out. The Kings are way down there. I mean, is this a time where we should be talking about them? I mean, Alec Martinez is out. There's the whole skate cut on his wrist thing. Do we start talking about a tank type situation with this team? And have you been on a team where you've gone to no hope so quickly? And what's that like?
Yeah, it's difficult. I watched the game last night, Coop. Let's just say it didn't have the atmosphere of the old face-off freeway like it did back in the day.
Both
teams were fighting for the Western Conference, Pacific Division. It was a little bit of a snoozer. I'll give the Ducks credit. The Kings came out so flat. They had no legs. The Ducks jumped on them, got two quick ones, two goals quick, sorry. And then I thought after the first intermission, the Kings finally found their legs, and I thought they were the better team. I thought they had the more quality chances, obviously more shots on net, and they probably deserved to win the game. And you got to give the old veteran Ryan Miller credit. He went in there, he played a great game. Obviously, Gibby was sick, so he wasn't supposed to start. He goes in there as a veteran. I think they had like 32 or 33 shots on him, and he did his job. And then my final thought in the game was, the Ducks PP finally got them one. They've been struggling, and I'm sure those guys on the power play were happy to get one. And it definitely wasn't a classic, but I'm sure the Ducks will take the 2 points.
Obes, do you think the Kings are going to tank? I mean, what's your take on this?
Yeah, I mean, anytime you use the word tank in professional sports, it's, as an ex-player, it's hard to accept. I don't think anybody, especially National Hockey League players, are ever going to, go out there and not try to win an NHL game. I don't think Rob Blake... I don't think Todd McClellan would ever tell their players not to try to win a hockey game. In saying that, we all knew at the start of the season that, this was going to be a tough, season for the Kings. And, give them credit. At home, they're playing some decent hockey. And for whatever reason, if it's their young guys, because it is a lot more difficult to play on the road in the NHL than it is at home, they just struggle on the road. They can't score goals. They obviously give up more goals on the road. And for whatever reason, I think personally it has to do with their young players not adapting to the NHL road style game. And but no, Coop, I don't think the Kings are ever going to tank. They're going to play hard, and they got some guys on there that have won championships like we've talked about. So no, I don't think the Kings will tank.
I don't think so either. And we've seen examples of tanking just simply not working in the past. I mean, the Buffalo Sabres famously, they never said they tanked, but in 2014-15, they essentially did tank to try to get Jack Eichel or Connor McDavid in the draft. And how many playoff appearances have the Buffalo Sabres had since they tanked?
Yeah, exactly. Good point. And as the season moves on here and we get into the second half, you see it around the NHL with teams that aren't going to make the playoffs. We'll see what happens at the deadline with how many veterans the Kings get rid of. But, they will call guys up from the American League, and they will put a team out there that's, probably not an NHL quality team, because they're going to give their young guys an opportunity. If you want to call that tanking, maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but that's just kind of how it works in the NHL when you're out of the playoffs. I remember in Denver, the lockout year, we were, dead last, and with the last, 10 to 15 games, they just called everyone up from, I believe it was Cleveland at the time, and, they sat out NHL regulars and just played the young kids. So if you want to consider that tanking, that may happen for the Kings, but I just think that's how it works in the NHL when teams are out of the playoffs.
It can't be fun, right? What was your experience like going to the rink in that situation? Every day? Or were you just sort of taking the whole what a league approach that you always take?
You know what, Coop? That was probably the hardest time of my life besides Calgary with what a league. I wasn't saying what a league very often. It was miserable. I mean, the guys were miserable. The coaches were miserable. Joe Sacco, he knew he was going to get fired. A lot of the players knew that they weren't going to be back next year. And, like we've talked about before, you have that countdown going. You cross a day off the calendar each day, and you get one day closer to the season being over. And it's terrible to say because, like we've talked about, Coop, it's a privilege and an honor to play in the NHL. But when you're on a last place team and shit's going sideways, it's pretty miserable.
I can't even imagine. That sounds awful. And I think the only time I really covered anything like that was in Nashville when they got Seth Jones in the draft. They got the number 4 pick after the lockout year, and I think that was when Colorado actually got the number 1 pick, if I can recall. So that was like kind of locked and tank battles that year. I don't think the Preds were really tanking. They just had too many guys who were proud in that room. But man, I remember there was just some shit that was being said that was, people were just not happy. I mean, proud veterans like Hal Gill just in there. You probably know Hal from just playing, and oh man, like that guy was not happy at all. And I could understand it. I mean, you're a veteran and he re-signed there basically to because he thought he would have a competitive shot, and it didn't work out. And a lot of it was the year after they lost Ryan Suter, and oh my God, it was really, really bad. So, that was something that was quite interesting and not super enjoyable to be around. I can imagine as a hockey player, it was not a what a league situation.
Yeah, no, and Hal Gill's a perfect example of a veteran guy that would, you know, be miserable going through that. And, you know, I got to give the Kings some credit. I think lately they've been playing a lot better, especially at home. And I think they have a lot of pride in that dressing room. And I don't think they're going to be tanking or not trying to win hockey games anytime soon.
Well, let's also talk a little bit about some of the guys who are pretty good in that team, too. And Nikolai, I think it's pronounced Prohorkin, scored a goal against the Ducks in the freeway faceoff. Carl Grundstrom, when he's been up, has looked quite solid, in my opinion. Guys who can move, get to the net, get to the greasy areas, as you like to call them. Blake Lizotte, a guy who we said simply won't be denied. And our Corey Pronman he wrote a story about guys who he was wrong about, which I loved. I love it when draft gurus do that, because you never see it that often. And I'm pumped that Corey did this. And he goes, when I watched St. Cloud stay in the 2018-19 season, Lizotte stood out as one of the better players, but I was never blown away by him. I saw a small forward with pretty good instincts and competitiveness who lacked standout speed and skill. I don't think his speed is elite for such a small player, but it's certainly a lot better than I thought and very good overall. I think his stick is a bit better than I thought too. Arguably underappreciated and didn't zero in on a player who was on such a deep St. Cloud team. Lizotte, I mean, another guy. So you got these three guys. They're not building block type players, but as the Kings get better down the road, I mean, that's a pretty good third line. If you have, say, Alex Turcotte on your second line, maybe Gabe Vilardi can refine his form as a prospect. That's not a bad situation to have.
No, the Kings, they definitely have some pieces. And the big Russian kid, how do you pronounce his name? Coop, you're the educator.
Prohorkin?
Yeah,
I think it's Prohorkin or Prokhorovich. I'm not totally positive. I just know that Todd McClellan calls him Pro.
Pro, there you go.
Let's just call him Pro.
Thanks. Yeah, good call, Todd. We'll call him Pro. We'll call him Pro. That a boy, Todd.
Yeah, yeah.
I liked his game last night. The goal he scored was an elite, big, skilled play by a big guy. You know, so the Kings, they definitely have some pieces, and it's going to take some time. And they got some veteran guys that are – I don't know – I don't know what to say about their veteran guys. I think they're playing as hard as they can out there. I just think the game has changed so much on them that the speed some nights just they can't keep up with it. But, you know, the Kings definitely have some pieces, and they just got to be patient and let this rebuild happen. And that's the hardest thing as a player, fan, management, coach is just trying to be patient.
You know what's funny is you mentioned that, because when we were talking to Jarrett Stoll last week, all I could think of is, why don't they just sign him up and put him in? Because he still looks like he can play when you, like, walk past him, basically. But you're right. What he said was interesting. He said that they were a team that used to grind it out, used to really get the puck in deep and make you work for every inch. And I remember someone showed a video of Matt Green, one of my favorite players from the Kings, I guess you can call Dynasty Eras, or Dynasty Era, just completely obliterating a guy in front of the net with like a vicious cross check or punch to the back of the head. No fucking way that's happening right now.
Yeah.
And you mentioned some of the guys who the game has changed on. I assume you're not referencing Kopitar or Dustin, or not Dustin, well, maybe Dustin Brown, but, or not Drew Doughty. You're talking maybe more about guys like Trevor Lewis, people like that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, first thing about Stoli, I love that guy. Obviously we had a great podcast with him last week. Stoli baby still looks like he can play, but with the new rules, if he came back, he'd have about 4 slashing penalties a game. I mean, that guy used to play hard, whack and slash and cross check. So, as good as Stoli looks in his suit nowadays, I don't think the new rules would help his game. He'd be in the penalty box quite a bit. But you know, listen, I'm not hating on these veteran guys. I played against a lot of them. They've had way better careers than I've had, and won 2 Stanley Cups. And you know, it just seems that the game is, you know, it's obviously faster. And they seem to be working hard and playing hard every night. They just can't seem to get much going offensively. And, I mean, they got to be frustrated with that as guys that have put up numbers their whole career. And, you know, they're working hard. They just can't seem to put it all together on a nightly basis.
No, they really can. And we mentioned the 5-on-5 play. They outshot the Ducks by a shitload last night and still lost. And, I mean, it's wild to me just how this team can play so well and not win games, which, again, encouraging if you're a Kings fan, but maddening in that you're losing games.
Yeah, and I guess that's my point, Coop, is the game last night is a perfect example. Besides the first period, they laid an egg in the first period for whatever reason. You know, you drive down on the bus that day and then you sit in traffic and whatever reason, they came out flat. But in the second period, they found their legs and they were the better team and they were working hard and creating chances and they just couldn't seem to make that extra pass or get the shot through and it would get blocked. And, you know, they're just having a hard time scoring goals. And it's not from a lack of effort because their veteran guys are still playing hard night in and night out. It's just got to be frustrating for them when they can't seem to just put it together and put up the offensive numbers they want.
And again, I just can't just wrap my head around, and we talked so much about the 2010s team last week. These guys have been, so many of these guys have been a part of those Stanley Cup teams to go from that to this, still be on here, and then also be on long-term contracts. That's just got to really suck. Like, I just can't wrap my head around that, but... you know, you just got to do your job and keep going forward. And there's one thing I saw in the Kings locker room when I was there last week. It was just a sign that said, do your job. And when I covered Alabama, that was an old Nick Sabanism. And I think that that's a super important thing to think about in every walk of life. Do your fucking job. So, and that it rings true in hockey. It rings true in everything. So, one team that did do its job last night was the Anaheim Ducks beating the Kings in the freeway faceoff. And one thing I like about this Ducks team is that they really are getting to those areas where they can score goals. They're not always scoring, but they did last night. And that was huge. Their finishers finished. Derek Grant finished. Jakob Silverberg got his 10th goal. And Dallas Eakins, he said, and Eric Stevens wrote about this, that I mean, he basically said you can't create a 50-goal scorer in this league, but he thinks that you can help guys get into scoring positions to be successful, and that's exactly what they're doing.
Yeah, no, Coop, I agree with what you're saying. You know, the Ducks, you know, they play hard, and they go to the net, and that's how you're going to score goals in this league, and especially when you don't maybe have the pure goal scorers or the pure snipers like the Ducks did have back in the day. But a guy like Grant, you got to give that kid credit. I think he got his 8th goal last night, and he goes to the front of the net. The goal he scored, he's in front of the net. The puck comes through. And he bangs it in. So there's no secret to scoring goals in the NHL. If you want to get to the greasy areas and get to the blue paint, you'll get rewarded. And the Ducks are doing that. And some nights it's not, they don't score as many as they like, but it's the reason why they're in hockey games and battling on a nightly basis.
The system is working really well, and it also helps when you have the man in goal that can stop the puck when guys are coming down the other end of the ice. And we are incredibly fortunate and thankful to have Anaheim Ducks starting goaltender John Gibson, and 2013 U.S. World Junior gold medalist. I love mentioning all that shit this time of year on the line. John, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good, Gibby. Thanks for coming on, buddy.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so, Gibby, I obviously, you know, you being a big Pittsburgh guy, and I saw you at, you know, Getsy's charity golf tournament this year. We were riding the course together, and you know, we were talking Steelers, and at the time you were pretty positive with that they were going to have a decent year. And, you know, I was the guy that was on the Browns bandwagon, and I thought it was going to be the Browns' time to take over the Steelers. So the first question I got to ask you is just, you know, what do you think about your Steelers and Mike Tomlin? And you got to be feeling pretty good about their team right now.
Yeah, I think all the Steelers fans are feeling pretty good right now. The two backups they've had and the new guy, the Duck Hodges has been playing really well, and going to the Brawl, obviously, it was nice to see them get a little revenge this past week against the Browns. That was a big win for obviously the rivalry and for giving them a pretty good spot in the playoff picture right now.
That Brawl was wild. Jeez, I remember watching that being like, oh shit, that's not good.
Yeah, we had a game, so I didn't catch it live, but I saw all the replays and everything, and I was reading about it on Twitter after the game, and I thought it was like a fake. You never see that happen. That was pretty crazy.
Real quick, have you ever been in a goalie-to-goalie brawl? Because you seem like such a pacifist in there. I can't imagine you being involved in one of those.
I got in one fight. I was in the American Hockey League. It's my first year in Norfolk. I fought Jeff DeLaurier.
Oh, boy.
He's a big boy. He's a big boy, Gibby.
Yeah. I can't even remember what happened. I think like we were skating by each other and something happened, and for some reason he got thrown out of the game. I got to finish the game. It was actually wild.
It's awesome.
I'll move it into some hockey stuff with you, Gibby. Just you know, about Dallas Eakins. I know me and you had him back in the day when you had to come down for the start of the season in San Diego, and I got to give you credit, bro. You were obviously a National League goalie at the time, and you came down and you played great, and it was fun going to the rink to you with you day to day, and you made it enjoyable for me. And you know, now that you have Dallas in the NHL, and I just want to ask you, first thing, is he doing the bike rides with all the boys? And as a goalie, do you have to jump on there and do those bike rides, or does he let you slide some days?
He does the bike rides just about every day. I mean, he has the bike and shorts or pants on and all that. But he's been on us a lot this year with the old wind bikes, the assault bikes. So,
oh, is that the one with where you got to do the hands too, Gibby? And
yeah,
is that the one?
Have like the fan rotating in it. So we've been on that a lot this year. I think that's kind of the new trend or the new way things are going. But yeah, that's a tough one.
And like you said, Gibby, it's hard to chirp about it because when Dally jumps on there and does he still do like the three groups and he does all three rides with all the guys? So it's hard to chirp him when he does it with you.
Well, he does it way more than us because we don't do those rides every day, but he's in there every day. That's the thing. Like, you got to respect it because he gets on the bike. He's probably the best one out of any of us. It's insane.
Yeah, he's a machine. And so he's not cutting. I thought maybe he'd be giving you and Millsy a little break. You guys are doing the same thing as like Getzy and the boys, that there's no shortcuts for the goalies when it comes to riding the bike?
Maybe every now and then, but I mean, we try to all be on the same page pretty much.
That makes me wonder, actually, do the Ducks have the biggest quads of any team in the NHL because you have Dallas as the head coach?
I mean, I guess we got to be up there. But actually, I mean, I think we did a lot more riding during training camp in the beginning of the season. And I mean, now we're into the thicker part where we're playing a lot of games and not too many off days. So the rides have been a little less here recently.
So after the Black Friday game, I actually walked past the coach's room and I saw a Trek bike outside of it. Like, is that Dallas's bike? I mean, I just like sort of thought like I was just like, wow, that may be his bike right there.
I don't think it's Dallas's. I think we have a couple equipment managers that they also love to ride bikes, and they ride when we're at Honda Center to the rink quite often.
Okay, because I saw that and I'd be like, I mean, it was the only time in my life where I was like, oh wow, this could be Dallas's bike outside the coach's room. It was just really fascinating to me. I'm sure you've gotten a bunch of questions on this, but now that it's been, I guess you've had an off season to sort of think about it. So you got your contract extension on your wedding. I know we've asked about that, but like now that you've had some time to think about it, I mean, what was that like just in general?
Yeah, it was pretty crazy how it worked out. I think it was, we were at rehearsal dinner and it was late. A bunch of people were leaving. So I think it happened like the night before around 11 o'clock, just as we were leaving. And then it's crazy how it all worked out. And then basically the next day was the wedding and just a big party, big celebration.
Open bar for sure. Eh, Gibby, after that contract, open bar for everyone, huh?
Take care, everyone.
I mean, how did word filter? I mean, I don't know where you got married. I mean, Eric Stevens somehow wrote about how it was at a church ceremony in suburban Whitehall. And I don't know how Eric gets these details about you all and his stories. He seems to know you all very well, but how did word filter around like, hey, John got his contract extension and he's getting married today? Like, did it filter out like around the guests? I mean, what was that like?
Yeah, I mean, it was crazy. I got asked about it a lot that summer. I think we were engaged for 2 years. So I think everybody kind of knew that when our wedding was, and then when Anaheim announced that it was on the wedding day. So, I mean, all went together well, and yeah, it was kind of crazy how it worked out.
And also, how in the world did Eric know exactly where the wedding was? That was terrifying for me as I was editing that. I was like, did he get invited?
I don't know. I honestly, I didn't even see that. I mean, if he wrote it quick, obviously he probably didn't. Maybe I think I talked to them maybe a few days after, like maybe a day or two after the wedding. So it could have been, maybe I told him, but I'm not sure.
You guys can find everything out, Coop, you media guys, eh? Yeah, so Gibby, I'm going to move up back to hockey here for you. And you know, obviously you play a lot of games. You enjoy the workload. And, you know, I just want to talk about your partner, Ryan Miller, last night, or just in general. You know, he steps in last night. You're not feeling well. I guess my question is, a guy who played against Millsy and is watching the game now and hasn't played for a long time, a guy that does it day-to-day with him, how does he continue to do it and jump in there and just always seem to play good whenever you're not in the net?
Yeah, I mean, you know how it is. He's just a true professional. I mean, he's been around for so long. He's he's played in so many big games, and whether it's international stage or NHL or playoffs and everything. I mean, he has all that experience, and I mean, obviously one of the older guys, but I mean, it doesn't mean he still can't play. And I think every time he goes out there, he proves that. And I mean, just for me growing up, he was a guy that I kind of looked to. I'm being an American guy, and he was kind of always the Olympic goalie and in the face and everything like that. And then down to my career to be able to play with him, it's kind of surreal how it kind of came full circle.
Yeah, I mean, I'm impressed with him too, Gibby, the way that he can still go in there and play the way he does. And he's been doing it for such a long time. And another guy I want to talk to you about that, you know, you've played with a long time, and you know, you were a kid when you first got to the NHL is just Getzy. You know, he just played his 1,000th game. You know, as any player, that's kind of the milestone, that when you hit that, you get the respect from anyone that ever played the game in the NHL, because to play 1,000 games is a long time. So I guess my question is just, you know, what has Ryan Getzlaf meant to you as a young kid that's come in the Ducks organization, and you've matured into, you know, who you are now, and you've seen Getzy play a long time. Just what does he mean to you and to all the guys in that dressing room?
Yeah, I mean, he's probably the best guy to ever wear the Ducks sweater. I mean, I saw whenever he played his 1,000th game that the whole Anaheim Ducks franchise only played 2,000. So, I mean, to say he's been a part of half the team's career games is an honor in itself. And then, I mean, him personally, I mean, you know him, what a guy he is. I mean, from being a leader to being able to step up and say something when it needs said in the locker room, just to being able to go out and have dinner with him and talk to him about anything else. I mean, he's the ultimate team guy, and for him to hit the 1,000 game marks, and not only that, playing the organization half of his career games and half of their organization's games, I mean, it's crazy.
John, I gotta ask, you've played behind some really, really awesome defensemen in your career, going back to World Juniors. So what's it like, you know, you had Trouba, Gostisbehere, and Seth Jones with that team. You had Lindholm, Manson, and Fowler on this team. You put the 2013 U.S. World Junior team up against your current defense. I mean, that's like a hard decision to make as far as those guys versus the other guys.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I was throughout my career, I played with a lot. I mean, that World Junior team was unreal. I mean, we'd have some great decors in Anaheim. I played with the under 23 team. That was some of the obviously best players in the NHL. I mean, every team I've been on, usually you at least have two or three.
The other thing I was curious about is, and I know there are some people have asked about this, but I figured, you know, since we're on a podcast where nobody's listening, just kidding, people do listen. What's it like? What's your emotions like during a game? You seem so calm, so cool, so collected. Do you get nervous? How do you harness that?
I think everybody, you get nervous, you get excited, and then I feel like once the game starts, I'm just out there playing, having fun. I mean, obviously, a lot of people go about it different ways, and I don't think there's really a right way or a wrong way to go about it. It's just kind of the type of person you are, and what works for you, and what works for me is just kind of going out there, playing my game, and just having fun and enjoying it, because I feel like that's when I have the most success.
And how much do you put into the hair flip when you put the goalie mask on? Everyone's kind of obsessed with those hair flips that goalies have flows
to. I know. Everybody asks that, and I just say, I tell people, I'm like, if you had longer hair and you had to wear a mask over your face, I mean, you got to make sure the hair's back, and that's just the easiest way to do it. And people think I'm lying, and I had like random fans ask me if I gel my hair and all this stuff. I'm just like, no, it's the easiest way to do it. If you had long hair and wore a goalie mask, you'd understand.
And Obi, comparing that to how much time you put into your hair before warmups, I mean, I'm sure you can relate.
Yeah, well, you know, Gibby has way better flow than I ever had in my NHL career. That's 100% guarantee. But I took pride in going out there with no bucket on. So, yeah, I was that guy before the game that would go in and maybe put a little hair product in there and spike it up or whatever I did. But one of my favorite things was going no bucket and warm up for sure.
John, just curious, just a couple more questions. And thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. I really appreciate it. Obi and Big Earn down in San Diego, what was that like? You knew you were going to be protected, right?
Oh, yeah. I never played with the Big Earn. That was my first time I've ever really been around them. So, yeah, it was awesome. I mean, those guys, I remember that team we had down there. I mean, we had probably four or five of the toughest guys in the league. I think we had Stu Bickel too, right, Obes?
Yeah, we had Bix, yep.
We had some. I thought we had somebody else too. I mean, but it was crazy. I mean, it was playing with those guys and playing with Big Earn and just kind of hearing the stories and everything that he's been through and been around. I mean, it was crazy. It was awesome.
I can't even imagine what it was like just having all those guys on one team. You probably went on the ice and you felt like you just had a bunch of gladiators out there and you just knew that nobody was ever going to just touch you.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, I remember Big Earn the first time I saw him fight when he goes down with the hands on his knees. I remember watching so many videos of that, but seeing it live, I mean, it's a whole new appreciation.
Yeah, sitting in the pocket, he used to call it. He was,
yeah,
you know, for the people that don't know the Big Earn Brian McGrattan story, it's pretty impressive what he dealt, you know, with on and off the ice. And he was a good teammate. And I've said this to you before, Gibby, when, you know, when you came down there to start the year, you know, you were just good about it. You were a cool dude. You played great and you made it fun to come to the rink. And you're only there for a short stint, but I definitely enjoyed playing with you. And I remember I was talking to you about Getsy's golf tournament. You said you bought a new house, so I'm just curious: how's the new pad? You got everything moved in? Is it dialed up, or how's that going?
It's going. We actually we just finished most of the construction, so we're in it and just kind of got to fill it now. But yeah, we're happy. I mean, we're in the new place, so can't complain.
Attaboy, that's good.
I think when we had Jared Stoll on, Obi referred to these as National League pads.
Yeah, that's called a National League pad for sure. You just always said that when a guy bought a new house that was coming off a nice contract, you just said that's a National League pad. And I'm happy for Gibby; he deserves it. And living the good life in Orange County, buddy. I'm glad you're enjoying it.
Thank you, I appreciate it.
And thanks so much for coming on with us, John. I really appreciate it. And best of luck rest of the way this season.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Gibby.
Thanks.
Have a good day.
You too. All right, Obes, well, that was fun. I mean, Gibby, a guy who is pretty private, doesn't say a lot, but really gave us a window into who he is. And I enjoyed hearing stories about you and the miners with him, just trying to protect him and protect the assets, make sure they don't get injured, right?
Yeah, he was, you know, that was the first year that the American Hockey League was back in San Diego. And obviously, Dahlia was our coach, and we had some young guys on the team mixed in with some veteran guys that had been in the NHL. And it was a feeling out process at the start of the year. And honestly, I think we started off like something stupid, 9-1 or something. And without Gibby, you know, it could have been the other way around. It could have been 1-9. He was unbelievable for us. And we touched about it a little bit, just the way he handled it. You know, he was an NHL goalie. Everyone knew it. He'd already played in the NHL. He played in the Stanley Cup playoffs. To come down to the American League and play hard and stand on his head and also be a good guy. For me, I was just getting to know Gibby, and that's when I kind of fell in love with the guy and really appreciated him as a person and a player. And it was a great question that you asked, Coop, just about his mentality and his demeanor. You know, we talked about the all, you know, decade team, and I picked Gibby to be my goalie. And the reason was because when he's playing well, he's even keeled, and when he's playing bad, he's even keeled. And a starting goalie, I think that's very important.
So one question I have about him that I've always just – with some goalies, you can tell why they're so good. Like, for example, you know, Pekka Rinne, we knew he's got the big size. He's got the glove. Jonathan Quick, just absolutely hyper-fast in the net. You played with and against Gibby. What makes him such a good goaltender? Because I feel like there's just really very few weaknesses in his game. He's almost like – you know, not, to a degree, I'd say, like a Nicklas Lidström type of does everything well.
Yeah, totally. I mean, the thing about Gibby I loved is he made the save you wanted him to make, which is, you ask any defenseman or any player or any coach, you want the goalie to make the save he's supposed to make, which Gibby does all the time. And then he makes that save that not very many guys in the NHL can make. You know, the post-to-post save, the big glove save, the pad coming across, plays the puck very well. And just a calm, cool guy in the net. I mean, you know, not that I was ever a goal scorer by any stretch, but my last summer skating with him, I got to be honest, I don't think I got one by him for the whole 2 weeks or 3 weeks we were skating together. He just, he got better every single year, and he continues to get better, and he's the reason why the Ducks have competed this year and been in hockey games.
And it's funny because we talk about the young guys, we talk about the forwards that they drafted, everything else, but really the torch is going to get passed for, and you asked that great question about Ryan Getzlaf. The torch is going to be passed from Ryan Getzlaf to John Gibson. He is the face of the franchise. He is the guy who is going to lead them. You know, we talked about our all-decade teams into the next decade. And that's, I think, the most important thing about him just in general. So we're really, really pumped that we had him on. One thing we did talk about earlier in this podcast was power rankings. Our Sean McIndoe did his own power rankings about basically had the Kings and Ducks not very high. Sean also could be heard on the Puck Soup podcast with Greg Wyshynski and Ryan Lambert. So I highly recommend listening to that. Very fascinating podcast. Lots of interesting takes on a ton of different topics. So please listen to that podcast, and also please rate and subscribe Point Breakaway on Apple. If you click on the show URL, theathletic.com/pointbreakaway, you'll get 40% off your subscription. And when you subscribe to The Athletic, you'll get to hear a bonus episode of Point Breakaway each week. This week, we will be talking to the one and only Kevin Connolly, also known as E from Entourage. And also, he was in the movie She's Just Not That Into You, which my wife and I love because we love romantic comedies. And he's also a boy of Obie's. Am I right, Obie?
Yeah, Cons is the man. So we're looking forward to that one. We're going to be up in his studio, Action Park Media in West Hollywood. So definitely tune to that one. I'm excited about this. Kevin Connolly is he's a Hall of Famer.
And I've been canvassing all my friends on what my favorite Entourage episode is, or what their favorite Entourage episode is. And I've been researching my favorite Entourage episode just in preparation for this podcast. So a bonus episode you won't want to miss. So I'm Josh Cooper. He's Shane O'Brien. And thanks again to John Gibson for coming on and answering all of our really tough questions.